Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff and volunteers who continue to do an incredible job of making KBOO the important community resource that it is. And you can help us by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. We're independent, community-supported, grass-fed, volunteer-powered radio. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Thanks for listening and stay safe.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from local businesses. Do you have a local business or an upcoming event you would like KBOO's listeners to know about? Consider purchasing an underwriting spot before your favorite KBOO show. Take advantage of the best rate and audience in Portland by going online to kboo.fm/underwriting. That's kboo.fm/underwriting.
Makes you such a threat.
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Takus kanskan onpi kele na yuha. Makakele. Hakant hanka takum e chaki ke he on. Ona ha ohoki chila mani pikte. Makakele ohoki la mi moshi kila. He on he che. Le on yuta. Tatani ma.
Ambete washtelo, chante washtena pechus al pielo, le unki piki he washtelo. Greetings, good day. I welcome you, my relatives, and I shake your hands with a good heart. It's good for all of us to be here. This is First Voices Radio, national, international, and I'm Teokasin Ghost Horse, sending you greetings and strength from the lands of the Munsee speaking Lenape. First Voices Radio is an all-native hosted, all-native produced, and produced by Liz Hill, a member of the Red Lake Nation. Today is our guest, Paul Crane Tolokai, and he was born on the Navajo Nation in Arizona in 1950 near Pinon, and his life began not without a struggle. He almost succeeded to life-threatening illnesses, but survived to become one of the last of his generation to experience life that others only dream of. And since childhood, his elders noticed Paul's strong independence, and his grandfather would say to him, "Here's a strange young man." And at age 8, Paul was raised traditionally in a remote rural area of the biggest Indian reservation in extreme poverty conditions. It was a happy time with caring mother and grandfather. While other children played together, he was often found alone exploring until he was sent to boarding school, where his world changed forever. During these years, he lived with non-native foster homes until graduating from high school at the tender age of 17. He finished high school and attended 1 year at a university, and he decided that what he had to learn was not indoors, and set out what would be a life of roaming free throughout North America, internationally working as a ranch hand, construction carpenter, steel worker, firefighter, and other jobs that would eventually play an instrumental role in contributing to his vast knowledge. His affinity for horses, which has brought the driving force of life, derived from his cultural tradition. In addition to growing up with horses and working ranches, has been a rodeo bronc rider, trainer, wild horses gatherer, veterinarian helper, and a rodeo judge. He is also a reputed native drum maker, offering his premier native drums through his company, Tolokai Drums, which received numerous endorsements by top native singers and drummers throughout Turtle Island. He has also led efforts to mobilize and bring to his community international people to gain intercultural experiences with tourism and sustainable practices. Paul makes his home now in Phoenix, Arizona, and also travels extensively as a lecturer on Native philosophy. One might ask how he has undertaken such a life that takes him to global communities. Paul has a vision acquired through an involuntary personal experience 25 years ago that changed his life. And he has followed that vision that defined his purpose in life to be a witness, teacher, and spiritual advisor throughout the world. As a respected Native elder throughout the world, his life continues to involve all who seek to empower their own spiritual growth through learning about being a human being. So I now welcome our special guest, Paul Crane Tolokai of the Dene Nation in Arizona. And welcome. It's an honor to have you here, Paul. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon.
Thank you. Paul Crane Tolokai in Shia. So Dene Nishna Koyate. So I introduce myself, my name, who I am, and greeting all of you listeners this day. I'm living in northern Arizona. We're building a house off-grid, so that's where I'm at. That's 50 miles south of Grand Canyon. So it's like back to living on the res. We haul our own water and make do with what we have, solar powered. And that much I want to say in greeting y'all.
In your bio I read about your life, talked about illness, basically struggle when you're a young man, a young boy. How your grandfathers in many Native ways, they often see your future. They see right through you and just kind of have that look. And your grandfather said, "Here is a strange young old man." What did he mean that? I really wanted to talk about that. What did he mean by that?
Well, Grandfather Tolagai was a medicine man of bison, they call him bison hoof and crane medicine man. Probably the last of his kind to practice this way. With it, he was able to summon what he called the power behind his medicine, which is stories relating to his way of treatment. And he always would say something, not directly to me, but to other people about me. And I would hear it sometime years later. But when I was young, he took me under his wing, so to speak, to talk to me about things I don't understand or didn't until years later. Then I remember, you know, what he said. And I remember when he passed on to the spirit world that I was the last to be with him and see him. He told me to go home and take care of my mother while he was holding my hand. I felt a surge of power or energy or whatever it was that rendered me awestruck, I guess you might say. That night in the ceremony for him, my arm went numb, and then it started flipping around like a fish out of water. And we left it at that, and years later, another medicine man told me that I had lightning in my arm. So to this day, I'm gradually assuming some of what it was. But so with that in mind, I wandered as I've done all my life, and I had the wanderlust of my Diné people that supposedly came down from the north. But these days, what is deemed as a primordial emergence from the underworld takes on a metaphoric interpretation of just where we come from. But for years, I've been meeting with other Diné people from all the way from Alaska down to the southwest, northern Mexico, the plains, exchanging migration theories or stories, I must say, that validates a lot of our ancestors' migration that is coming to light now. But anyway, I took on his name at some point in my life at the suggestion of my aunt, who said, "You're going to carry his name wherever you go." And little knowing that I would be out there free roaming out in the world, sharing with a different culture. And that took me to Europe, Japan, Australia, and then here and there, England. And each time I'm there, I remember who I was, where I came from, and what was said to me when I was young. And that's how I got out there. And with other native people too, we used to do powwows in Europe. But my love was to work with horses in the world, doing seminars on Native American natural horse training. And of course, it goes back to our old story of creation, how the sun goes across the sky, carried by a young warrior on a horse. So that much we know and believe, that the horses have been here since time immemorial. Now, scientists are validating that the horse is originated from here. And I see it as their journey around the world, and having come home, there was a homecoming when the Spaniards brought them over. And one of the oldest breed is in South Dakota, Cheyenne River, used to be, but they're down in the Black Hills now. And I'm working with them as a Native advisor. So, yeah, I suppose my grandfather did foresee something. My first Amalachia vision quest was on Bear Butte, where he came to me on a horse from the west and laid down a medicine bundle. And I think about it now, I'm survived 74 winters, thinking that's a little late in time for me to take on something of that nature. But I also revel in the thought that maybe I got a lot more years to go. So living the old traditional way, majority of my time is spent outside in nature. And that's good. That's how a native should live, as we say. Besides, claustrophobia indoors. So a little sharing of that, yeah, for people, as to people like me caught in between times, changing in the world and having to live in two cultures sometimes, even thinking that we, because there is a difference, I believe, between indigenous mind and what I hear as European mind or industrial mind or Western mind. Life takes on a different note when you speak your language, you remember this is how we think, this is how we should behave. And my language, Diné language, has been shown to be very positive language that projects things positive, the outcome of what we see. And these days, most of us speak English, which has a limitation, and very confusing, ever-changing. I think that's important to remember who we are by speaking our language. I try to convey that out in the world and bridging the cultural gaps for greater understanding of indigenous people, whether it pertains to our rights, our land, including that which wants to live, but it's getting harder. I'm speaking of the wildlife, not just horses, but the bisons, eagles, winged ones, and so forth. And when they're gone, seems like our history parallels human and their counterpart, the indigenous species, wildlife. My thoughts, anyway, about those things.
That's a story in itself, Paul. I do understand about the English, you know, it's very aggressive, and it's kind of a different, as you heard in my introduction, a little excited to finally talk to you from a different reservation, although I understand English is that language of depletion in somewhat. It always extracts, doesn't know the land very well. I think that's part of why so many people struggle. They forgot the relationship, and that's why they're looking for connection, which to me is a little different than relationship. But you seem to have found something here, because your many jobs that you've had, I mentioned them before, they also added to your knowledge and took you throughout the world. As you said, you went through boarding school and you found what I could read is a story. That's what I'm saying. Your story in the making. You came back to the original purpose, as you described the horses and their ceremonies and how they came back full circle, and your affinity for horses. And I spoke to you earlier. My father was an Indian cowboy, a Lakota cowboy, which is very ironic, the term Indian cowboy, because stereotypically in the West, they seem to think that, oh, those are two enemies. It doesn't matter which age bracket you come from, whether you're a millennial or something older to grow up with Lone Ranger and Tonto, that stereotype is still ingrained in how they look at Native people. And you came to work with horses. What I'm interested in is how different you treated the horses, and my question is there a difference in how you treated the horses, how you broke the horses, quote unquote broke, in a Washichu or the white man's way, very violent? As I've witnessed native cowboys not having to jump on a horse and spur to break the spirit of the horse. Rather, they encourage a relationship, you know, and offered a friendship to the horse. That's what I wonder is the difference between what an Indian cowboy is to one who, you know, has 1,000 herd of horses and is very proud of that and has made no friends of any of those. But in this case, you have a few horses that you have made relationship with. Is that my own track here, Paul?
Yeah, I think we all have some perspective of our association with other life forms. For me, you know, I sometimes remind people when they call me cowboy, and I said, nope, I'm not a cowboy. I'm a horseman. Because I grew up on a cattle ranch down in Prescott, Arizona. And, you know, for some real dumb critters, cows can outsmart you. That says something about me. So I let the cowboys be cowboys, and I work with the horses mostly. Green breaking horses for ranches, and usually they were crossbred with a Mustang blood in them. Those are the ones that had endurance, that knew the country. And working with horses, some years ago, that phenomenon about horse whispering caught on. And I never believed that. And I thought, hey, no such thing. Closest would be some, I would say, mystical experience with horses that Native people had. It's like I said earlier in our creation story about a horse and the sun. So in that way, it takes on a different approach. First, you gotta think, have a horse sense, a common simple solution. So the connection is in spirit with the horse. Each horse is different, just like we are. So approach, a relationship develop is trust. The point is not to break the spirit of the horse, but let allow them to be who they are. You meet them halfway, they'll meet you halfway. My last horse died at 28. He roamed free. I let him roam free. I rescued him from a BIA horse sale. I knew right away he was different. So for years he roamed, and I traveled a lot. And my mother, who was living then, she used to tell me, "I always know when you're coming home." I said, "Why is that?" I said, "Your horse would show up." And he did. One time I came home and they had a sweat lodge ready for me. We went in the evening. Sometime during the course of the ceremony, before, I wondered, where is he? Why isn't he here? And by the third round, somebody tapped me and said, "Your horse is outside." I went out, and sure enough, he was on the east side. I motioned because he understood my hand signals, language that we shared. And he come around to me in front of the lodge, and I fanned him off with an eagle fan. Then away he went into the night. So with the horse, it's like that. You know, if you gain their trust and their, you make connection with the spirit, then it's not like other ways that they are sometimes tortured using very cruel methods. And those horses, I guess you can train them to be pet-like and do things against their nature, which is fine and good if, for sure, I guess. But ours, we keep their spirit alive. That's what makes them who they are. You got to give them their pride and dignity. Yeah, just like you would another human being. Because in the end, we use them, my tribe does. There's a horse that is put down at the gravesite that carries the deceased into the spirit world. Okay, yep. Of course, there's many things that I do, you know, like working with a horse in out in natural setting, like in the water, the air. And my last horse that I was talking about, one morning I went outside to sing him a song with a hand drum, and he responded. And actually, he taught me for him to change gait at the four basic beats like we use in the Sundance. That signals him to change gates from trot, canter, to gallop, and whatever. Four basic ones. And I do that with the horses because you're working with their senses, all senses, not just sight, but smell, taste. There's no custom of ours where we take the saliva of the horse and put it in our mouth, or make a connection. And sound has to do with it too. Sometimes I blow into the nostril of the horse, the breath. I take on his breath, we share. And they're quite phenomenal in that way that they sometimes approach you and talk to you, body language, which is far different than other ways.
Yeah, that seems to be, it's far different than other ways. And it reminds me of earlier when I read a little bit about your spiritual growth and how you became this speaker, this teacher, witness, advisor throughout the world. And from what I'm hearing here is a lot of the internal native philosophy that you carried by traveling and having ceremony with other native peoples. And through this witnessing or hearing of what you're saying, listening of what you're saying, is that you talk about being a human being again. And most people would, is that being reborn? Is that, what do you mean being about being a human being again? To me personally, I would say that we forgot how to be a human being, and we are only humans now. And there's quite a difference there also, as you talked about the horse. There is, how do we treat each other and those human beings, and how we treat the earth? That seems to be when the eagles and the our relationship with, they call them animals, other birds, the mountain lions, the wolves, that they seem to be less and less of those, as I noticed, less and less birds, less and less wildlife, due to, you know, I live in the East here in New York, and there's a lot of civilization. Everybody's on the grid, including myself, and a lot of people are searching for what you're talking about. That I wouldn't say is simplistic. It's not, because that's how I grew up. There's very intelligent ways of being without being intellectual. And that's what seems like what you have undertaken with your relationship with those global communities. What does it mean to about being a human being again? All right, let's remember that question for the second half of this interview, Fascinating with Paul Tolokai. This is First Voices Radio. See you back in a second or so.
Land, air, and water, it's nature's law. First Voices Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the voices of people experiencing the consequences of war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. You can hear the perspective of indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law. Land, air, and water. The voices of the original peoples. Our guests are from every continent on Earth, endangered, unheard, and forbidden from being heard on mainstream and the neoliberal left airwaves, whether it is alternative or progressive radio.
I want to welcome you back to First Voices Radio. My name is Teokasen Kostors, your host here for the last 33 years. Upcoming interview is with Paul Tolokai. And the question was, what does it mean to become a human being, or what is a human being to this elder, the day elder, Paul Tolokai? Stay with us. Fascinating. Thank you.
Well, by that is to mean, taking a step in remembering our spiritual self. We come into this world as a spirit and enter human physical embodiment. And all our life, our spirit is learning to be human. And our human self is searching for the spirit. Eventually, you know, if one does, it's not a strive for perfection, but more or less a balance, at knowing to be human and also learning to be spiritual. And the two aspects of yourself is like a duality. Everything has an opposite. There's an opposition in everything. Day, night, man, woman, up, down, black, white, whatever. Opposite seasons, but I think that's why indigenous people way of life being animistic, believing everything has a spirit and a right to live. We complete the circle of life, knowing who we are, where our place is. not a hierarchy, but a just part of the circle where we're no more, no less than other life forms. And I'm sure they know that. And the way of life, as opposed to a religion or something else of the sort, is quite different. It brings about a humility, true humility. In other ways, I hear people say, I very humbly say to you, or something like that. But I think about that and I says, whoops. Just think, when you're humble, you lost it again to pride. So it's ever challenging in a lifetime, but one has to know yourself to know where you are at all times in relationship with the world, with others, with yourself. So that much I understand, that life can be hard or can be easier. But as I said before, it's not to go too far extreme either way, but to have a balance, knowing that you're only human and you make mistakes. You're not so spiritual that you think yourself above others that way. And every day is a challenge. And when you follow a path, a way of life, in obedience to the laws of nature, which is Creator's law, to my thinking, that you must have respect, honor, and accord pride and dignity to others to live and learn in their own time and their own way. But I think a lot of that is missing these days, because our generation now may be the last to fully understand, because so many are seeking wisdom. And that itself, as you said, is another story. People ask me, you know, how does one gain wisdom? I said, well, you have to have knowledge. The only way to have knowledge is to have an understanding of what you're thinking or saying. And furthermore, it has to do with experiencing, personal experiencing, real experience. It accounts for everything. If you just like seek wisdom in a weekend workshop or from Google, now that they have artificial intelligence, people assume that's wisdom. But no, it has to do with your daily life experience. For me, it was going out into the world and experiencing others, other places, land, animals, and ways of life that used to be here. But all in all, they were one the same at some point for each race of men. I see so many people trying to find their way back in nature, but it takes sacrifices, and sacrifice of yourself, time, resources. I've walked many paths, many roads, literally hitchhiking, not knowing where I'm going. That's how I ended up in northern Canada, riding for an outfit way up in the Grand Prairie, back down to Alberta when I was just a kid. But that travel, little knowing that that was the beginning. These days are more or less stationary or subdued and being domesticated as I tell people. It's hard. You don't expect a horse to be corralled any more than what your nature is to wander. And that's, I got to be here. Don't know where the path is going from here, but certainly it's not the end. Oh.
So we're speaking with Paul Crane Olakai, and he is from the Dene Nation or the Navajo Nation. And there's Arizona, and he's born in 1950 near Pinyon, Arizona, on the Navajo Reservation. And I'm wondering if I could ask one short question, because we have just enough time to squeeze in another answer and question. You mentioned there are the opposites there. And I've been learning, you know, quite much. And there's the old Lakota. And then there's a new dictionary, Lakota. And old Lakota was spoken in the 1800s before, you know, we met the Americans and their influx and their colonization. And I learned, my mother, who passed recently, she said to me that you cannot speak Lakota without intuition, which reminds me of another ancestor of Lakota people, Black Elk, who said the center of the universe is everywhere. And that reminds me, if the center of the universe is everywhere, then what the old Lakota says is that there are no opposites. There cannot be. And he spoke of the duality. We understand that. So maybe, to me, our framework in speaking this language, English, is that duality that we have to explain it in, ourselves in, which can never fit. That's why it always is ill-fitting. So we can't really interpret our languages into English because it's more of a spiritual verb nature language. And I just wanted to ask you, what's your thoughts if I was to say there are really no opposites? It's just how we were programmed to think. But when you go back to the old way, old way, everything is a relationship. But yes, because we are humans, we have the fragility that we can only work in dualities. But I think, like everything else in life, on a service level, spiritual level, in the earth, that they are very multi-dimensional. They do not have opposites. In fact, they cannot, because that's like, you know, good and evil, dark and light. And yes, that's our reality as humans. But if I go back to the old Lakota, there are no opposites. Your thoughts on that, Paul?
Okay. There's a commonness I noticed with Lakota and Diné. Some sound words are very sacred. We say ho, ho, diyin, ho, hocha, waka, hoka, hojo. There are words that begin with a certain sound. But when we talk about, when I was talking about duality, it's encompasses the intake of everything with the senses to compromise. You may see something not good and something that is better. Who's to say it is any better? Because in the end, something seemingly not good could become good, and something very nice, very good could be deceiving. So one has to rely, like you said, on old Lakota. There is old Diné too, that realizes and understands that it is about circumstances, situation, place, so many variables that one intakes, and it's tricky when you live in the modern world that you're exposed to everything. Whereas the old Lakota, old Dene, they thrived and lived in certain conditions in nature where ultimately it was about their survival. So they didn't have a whole lot of time to decide what they want to do. It was what they had to do to survive. Granted, yeah, there may be opposite, but how do you fare? What's the outcome of the situation? Example being in a storm, like in winter, you want sunshine. It may break where the sun comes out. So we are constantly in the middle. You don't go with one way or the other way. That's why I believe it all has to do with where we are. I live basically now in nature, close to the land, off grid, but it's bothersome. I have to go into the city sometime, and you can tell the difference. I think it's up to the person to recognize these and chart a path for himself to a better, let's say, for good health and to be happy. Happiness, to me, is all it's about. Any more than that, you know, we have to be responsible for what it is that we take on, whether in thought, in creating a personal philosophy, believing, belief system. But again, we go back to being human. There's nothing written in stone about how everything is. The season change, time changes, marches on. We just live with an understanding that it is a journey. It's not what it's the end of the journey, but the journey itself, they say.
Paul has drums, Tolakai drums, Tolakai drums. Let me spell the first word. His name is Tolakai drums. And if you just Google that or whatever you do, find those drums. I was looking at what he does with them, and the design, and they're very solid, very sturdy. And that's what I can do here in First Voices Radio, is bring forward the artist in each, spiritual artist is what I would call Paul. And I really like to thank you, Paul, for being here. Paul Crane Tolakai from the Navajo Nation in Arizona. It's a great honor to hear your words. Thank you for being that elder, holding the vision still and spiritually growing as you still are, as we all are. But thank you again, the Wopila Tonka. And thank you again, Paul, for being here.
Aloha. Thank you. Yeah.
Down in San Antonio, waiting on an 8 o'clock train. My woman left me here last night. Things ain't been quite the same. I gotta get back to Dallas and tie up a few loose ends. I'm gonna work a week, I'll make $100. Hit the road again. So I don't want you to think that you're the first one to leave me out here on my own. Cause this ain't gonna be the first time this old cowboy spent the night alone.
a bigger fool. I can't remember when I've been. Just to open up my heart and let you walk right in. But there's one thing in life that ain't hard for me to do. That's as soon as I kiss the lips of another woman, I'm gonna forget all about you. So I don't want you to think that you're the first one. Leave me out here on my own. Cause this ain't gonna be the first time this old cowboy spent the night alone. Name down, I know, and let me pick one out. I don't believe it'd be one in a whole bunch. Oh, I'd give a hoot about. So I don't want you to think that you're the first one. Leave this old boy out here on his own. No, it ain't gonna be the first time this old cowboy spent the night alone.
Yeah. Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. And everybody knows. And everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows that it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through. From the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach in Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming upon. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that's how it goes.
And that was Leonard Cohen with Everybody Knows. And before that was Marshall Tucker Band, This Old Cowboy. This is First Voices Radio. My name is Teokasen Ghostors. Thank you for joining us here once again. Doksha ake wa chiyanktelo. See you again eventually. We'll be right back.
listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy lunes 27 de enero.